Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. I've canceled on him once this week, but this is Thursday, March 31st. We still don't know the fate of one Tiger Woods, but we have Kyle Porter here from CBS. I want your final answer. I know we've been back and forth on this. Is Tiger Woods playing in the Masters?
I just want to know what time Mike Weir's tea time is on Thursday morning.
That's the biggest question going into the Masters for
yeah,
you?
Yeah, forget Tiger. Let's talk about Mike Weir. Now, there's no way Tiger's playing.
Right.
They're saving it for a Friday news dump. Like, this is incredibly obvious. They're going to just throw it away on Friday afternoon. You know, Tiger's not playing, but he's got a timetable. His trad looks good. Like, you know, all the usual stuff. I mean, they're not playing this on a simulator, are they? Like, they're not playing the 2016 Masters on a simulator.
I mean, if it was the par 3 course, maybe if you could play it on the simulator, but I'm not sure. it is interesting that it's gone till 7 days before the event, and then we still haven't heard anything. I don't understand the rationale behind that. I'm guessing that just is to get people doing exactly what we're doing right now, which is talk about it.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Because last time, 2014, when he withdrew, he did it, I believe it was 9 days before the event. Now, that was a little different. Well, they did it on April Fool's Day, first of all, which was terrible. But that was a little different because he actually had surgery. This time, presumably, there's no surgery. There might be. I don't know. But it's kind of strange for them to wait this long.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't feel like Tiger does stuff just for media attention. At this point, I don't think he has anything to gain from that. So it is the only question I'm asking myself is why hasn't he announced yet? Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. None of it adds up. I don't think he's made golf swings past that simulator swing, really, which was just kind of an F you to anyone that was reporting that he was still, you know, bedridden and whatnot. But it doesn't add up, but it is really funny. It's kind of like I've stared at it so long that I've gotten like Stockholm syndrome is not the right word for it, but like I've somehow talked myself into it that he's going to play. Even though like, I know he's not, in my head I've kind of talked myself into that he's going to play at this point.
But what is he going to do if he plays? Like what is that going to look like?
Well, I keep going back to that I get every Tiger prediction wrong, okay? I didn't think there was any way he'd play last year. I didn't think it made sense. I didn't think he was going to make the cut. And then he was, you know, in the top six going into Sunday, and I triumphantly declared that he was back on Twitter. I think I even used an exclamation point in there. I said, I'm ready to say it. He's back. And how did that call look out? So I get nothing right when it comes to Tiger. And, hopefully that's good news because hopefully he does play. That'd be really, even if he shoots 85-85, I think that would be kind of interesting if he did show up this week.
Well, I think the only way he plays is if he, similar to last year's Masters, when he healed himself, he healed his own wrist. Maybe he healed own back.
That's true. That's true. Maybe something about just being at Augusta lets him just heal himself, pop bones back into place, and yeah, he probably just had to go back to Augusta to get his front tooth replaced when that popped out without spilling any blood at Lindsey Vonn ski event. So
are we still like underplaying how weird that quote was?
How did people just let that go? Like that was there wasn't a follow up question to that. It was like, yeah, it got knocked out and there wasn't any blood. Okay, sounds good. Same with Rinaldi, just let it go too when Tiger was like, my bone popped out of place, but I just popped it back in and played the remaining nine holes. Rinaldi's like,
I just healed my broken wrist.
Yeah. No follow.
Okay. Well, have a good dinner, Tiger.
All right. Well, by the time this probably gets posted, he will have announced that he's not playing. So we just wasted the 4 minutes of everyone's time. But anyways,
yeah.
7 days before the Masters, how many words have you written so far already?
Well, I ranked the field 1 to 88, and that was about 6,000 on its own. I'm already like I'm already stressed out, and it's and it's the Thursday before the. It's not even the Thursday of Masters Week. It's the Thursday before. I'm excited though. I'm going. Did you know that?
I did know that. That's is this your first time going as a media member?
First time going as a media member. Yeah. Been before a few times as a fan. Yeah. So I'm jacked up. I'm fired up. I'm going to be there for 9 days. I'm going to send a screenshot to our group text of the when I win the lottery to play the course.
I was just that was gonna be my next question. Is there really a lottery at Augusta? I didn't think there was one.
And then I'm gonna leave the group text and not talk to you.
I should have let you finish that. But I don't want
There's a lottery.
Okay. That's right. Only like four guys or something like that, isn't it?
No, I think it's like 30.
Oh wow, I'm on top of this one. If you can't tell,
The first year I was working for CBS, it was kind of up in the air whether I was going to go. And I was talking to Shane Bacon about it because he had just left CBS, and we were talking about the lottery, and he said, "If you get to go and you win the lottery to play the course, I'm going to send ricin to your."
This was during the Breaking Bad years, huh?
Yeah, to your house in the mail. I'm gonna mail it to you, and you're gonna open it. It was so funny, dude. I died whenever he said that to me.
Ricin.
But yeah, no, it's one of the alluring things about covering it as a media member.
Well, you just gave yourself homework, by the way, because I'm requiring that you tweet before you go. It has to be like in PDF format, like your scripting for the chance if you actually get to play Augusta come Monday.
I'll lay it out on my on my nightstand and just tweet it out for the world.
I think that gets you casually like slowly withdrawn from the lottery. Like, we're just gonna escort you off the premises as soon as the event's over.
I'll show up for parking the first day, and they'll be like, "Yeah, we don't see you on this list anymore."
You're running enough risk as it is just coming on this podcast before you go. You should. If I was you, I'd be like in full protection mode, watching every word I say, making sure I don't get banned from that place.
No, I'm in all seriousness, I'm very excited that the
switches very quickly.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back in Tiger mode. I'm super excited about it. The Augusta National people have been incredibly accommodating, very nice. It's gonna be awesome. I mean, it's the best week of the golf year, obviously. And when Phil wins his fourth green jacket, I'm gonna be there to cover it.
Wow. Okay. First of all, I was gonna say you're safe. No one from Augusta is listening to this podcast, and that answers my question I had for who your pick is. That's your official on the record pick, then, huh?
Yeah, I turned it in today. I've got Phil. If you look, so last year he finished tied for second. He only lost because Jordan Spieth put up one of the two best scoring performances of all time at Augusta. He was terrible going into last year. His average finish in his six events leading up to last year's Masters was 39th. And I think he had like two or three missed cuts in there. I mean, it was just egregious. This year his average finish has been like 21st, and him and Ricky Fowler are the only two guys on tour so far this season in the top 20 in strokes gained putting and strokes gained tee to green. He's leading the PGA Tour in adjusted scoring average, 69.008. I mean, he's been unbelievable this year. How many stats do you want from here?
I was just going to let you keep going until I gave you my reasoning for picking Spieth, which was I picked him before the season, so I'm sticking with that. So.
I think that Phil, I mean, you and Shane talked about this the other day, but I think that Phil's got one last major in him. I don't think it's going to be a U.S. Open. I know it's not going to be a British Open. That was just a bizarre one-off. I think it's going to be either a PGA Championship or a Masters. And I think the strangest thing about all of this, it doesn't feel like Phil is almost as old as Jack was in 1986. It's when he won it, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I don't even look at Phil as old, to be honest. I mean, I don't think. He's had a down couple years, but that almost is already forgotten for me. Like, it's not strange to see him in contention anymore. not strange to see him get off to a hot start. He's not really put four rounds together and really come close. Well, he came really close at Pebble this year, but I'm not viewing him the same way I viewed him going to the tournament last year, or maybe even the year before when we hadn't seen him, really. I guess that's 2014 might not be the best example because he just won the British, eight or 9 months before that. But it seems like he was kind of an afterthought last year, surprised people with the T2, and then got really quiet afterwards again. But that's almost forgotten. If you look, I think he's got a great chance to contend this week. But that's the problem is, like, you can say that for like 12 guys right now. You and I did a preview podcast last year for the Masters talking about how there's just too many guys to pull for. And it ended up, I mean, Spieth kind of ran away with it, but a lot of those guys we were talking about before were hanging around right near the top of the lead. Like, this tournament is just set up for such perfect drama, and we have, like, six guys that I would be 0% surprised if they won. And they're between Spieth, Day, Rory, Scott, Ricky, and Phil. And I probably left somebody out by naming them that fast. Like, there's Bubba, yeah. There's like 0% shock if any of those guys win. And as scary as that is, Bubba being a 3-time jacket winner and 3 times in 5 years. I'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. What should my punishment be if Bubba wins? Like, what should I do? Just like log off Twitter for like a month or what?
You should probably just change your Twitter profile to. You should have to like just tweet something nice about him like once a week for the rest of the year.
Well, let's go with things that are actually physically possible, like actual things that can happen.
You should not be allowed. What is your triumvirate of courses? Riviera, Memorial, and
Augusta.
And Augusta.
Yeah.
You should. Well, I can't say this about the Masters. You should just not be allowed to watch Riviera and Memorial anymore.
My home course, not my home course, but that's my hometown tournament, man. Memorial is my hometown tournament. You can't do that to me.
Your home course.
I wish.
Yeah, but I mean, the point remains, like, the seven guys you mentioned, I'll throw Justin Rose in there, I'll throw Louis Oosthuizen in there. Do we really think the winner's coming from outside of that group?
No, I don't. I definitely don't think it will.
I don't at all.
It's easy to forget, though, and granted, there's a big difference in three rounds versus four, but wasn't Charlie Hoffman in the last group last year? Or second to last, maybe last group on Saturday?
Yeah, he was in the last group on Saturday. That's before right. He bogeyed, I think, number two, and we haven't seen him since.
He got dropped from coverage for the whole tournament. But what about, like, I mean, the next group, I guess, is like Schwartzel, Stenson, Snedeker, Matsuyama, Zach Johnson. Like, that would surprise me. It wouldn't, like, blow me away, right?
Did you know Stenson's never had a top 10 at Augusta?
Really? Didn't he shoot, like, 64 opening round 1 year or something? Or 68 with a quad. Didn't he quad the last hole?
Yeah, no, I think he did. I think he led after... I think he pulled, like, the Bill Haas Memorial and led after... after the first round, but yeah, he's never had a top 10 there. I don't know. Like I look at these guys, these historically great guys, like Rory already is, like we think Spieth and probably Day will be. And it's like, is Jimmy Walker going to beat out all of these guys at Augusta? Yeah. You know, like it's one thing if you've got a couple that are historically great and some others that are kind of playing well, but you have four or five historically great players that are all playing really well coming into the Masters. It's just, it's so hard to beat two or three of them, much less, eight of them, like we mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think, after what we saw last year, Spieth burned the entire course to a crisp. Like, are we expecting firm greens this year? Or what are they, Augusta's not going to want to see minus 18 beaten at all. What changes do you think they're going to make for the current year?
Well, Spieth did a recon mission before Cadillac and said that it was, he said it's pretty quick. And so, yeah, I think that, I mean, it's hard for me to see like something past 13 or 14 winning it this year. But then it's supposed to rain on Thursday and Friday. So, you can't help that. And, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Speaking of rain, then that transitions well to the next guy that, I wouldn't say people aren't talking about, but just kind of, he's maybe, he's listed as the third favorite on the board, second tied with Spieth, but a little bit quiet chatter going into about Rory, and it's not the same attention on the career slam this year as it was last year. How are you feeling about his chances?
Yeah, so his problem, I mean, if you look at his last 10 rounds of stroke play, Sean Zach of golf.com pointed this out to me. He's got 10 double bogeys or worse in his last 10 rounds of stroke play. And that's how you lose the Masters, specifically. I mean, we saw that with Phil in, I think it was 2012 when Bubba won. Phil tripled number four in the final round, and he could have won it that year. He could have at least gotten into a playoff. I mean, that's exactly how you lose the Masters, is by making a double bogey on Saturday or Sunday and kind of falling out of it. But, I mean, I don't know. I just watch him, and it's like, I don't know. Like, am I wrong in thinking that he looks kind of confident with the putting stroke right now?
I like
putting
it. Stroke? I'm all in on it. I really like it. I think, well, far be it for me to compare myself to Rory McIlroy, but I'm a really bad putter.
No, so that's exactly what I was expecting to be, actually.
Well, I'm a really bad putter, so I change something about my putting maybe once every 3 months. And that first wave after switching always feels great. Like, I'll switch the left hand low, and I'll just be like, why have I not been doing this the whole time? Or I'll do the claw, or I'll go to the broomstick. Or I've tried a lot of things, trust me. So I think that it's definitely a one-to-one, apples-to-apples comparison, that this is what Rory's experiencing with the transition to the left-hand low. But no, I haven't got to watch a lot of him playing, but I've been following the stats closely, because I've been already reading about people saying he needs to switch back, and it looks like it's working out pretty well in his benefit so far. So it's not that's cost him so far. It's been his ball striking that's been a little bit shaky, and I don't know if that makes me less or more encouraged going into it. I don't know if ball striking is something you can really just, you know, flip a switch and turn on. But, you know, something about that place for some guys really fits their eye, and that it just gives them that extra level of confidence in their ball striking, that they don't have to worry about their misses, right? They don't have to worry about their drives getting too wayward, and there's not a lot of fairway bunkers there. And I mean, Rory's not ever really finished great or strung four rounds together, but like it's easy to forget how close he was to like running away with it in 2011. Yeah. And yeah, it's a backdoor top 10 last year, but I think over like the final 45 holes or something last year, he was the lowest scorer or something like that. It's not like he hasn't had success there and can't do it. It's just about, you know, it happening at the right time for him.
Yeah, and to your point about the putting, I'm pretty sure he went from, like, I think he was like 155th or something in strokes gained putting, and then he switched, and now he's 100th. Now, that's not, 100th is not good, but it's a lot better than 155th. So there's been an improvement over the last few tournaments in terms of his putting. For me, it's all about the first 27 holes at Augusta. If he can shoot, I don't know, 34, 33, 36 on the first 27 holes, then you get to the back nine on Friday and you haven't had that. I mean, his issue, and he said this, it's been having a blow up nine. Like, he's had a nine hole score of 40 or worse each of the last 5 years, and that's just, it's so difficult to dig yourself out of that hole. If he can get to the back nine on Friday without doing that, and you know, like, with the confidence of that he hasn't done it yet, I think he might be lights out. Like, I think he could do it. But those first 27 holes, I think, are really big for him.
Have we, do we know, when did he actually switch the grip? Do we know? Was it before the Honda, after the Northern Trust? Before the Northern Trust?
I think it was Cadillac, wasn't it?
Oh, it's before the Cadillac. So he's only had three, including the match play, with the new putting grip. Is that right?
I believe so.
Okay, because his strokes gained putting during the Cadillac was 0.697, so basically 0.7 strokes, which is very good. During the Arnold Palmer, it was 0.973, which would basically be close to leading the tour if you average that over an entire season. So that was also very good. They don't have the stats for the Dell match play, but those are his first two stroke play events, but his putting has been phenomenal. So I think the stat you cited, sorry, I'm getting excited over here. I'm recovering from food poisoning still at the moment, so if there might be a pause here where I have to make a run to the restroom here. His first two starts with the new putting grip have been very encouraging, in my opinion. And the stat you cited was a blended rate of, you know, his strokes gained putting, which included like the fries.com, where he had a terrible putting week, and the Honda Classic as well, where he had another poor one, assuming that we're right on the cutoff of the putting grip change.
But. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he missed Honda, then tweeted the picture of him with the different grip, and then Cadillac was next, I believe.
Cadillac was that following week. You're right.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's how it went. I think the other thing with him, I think he's sort of, and I think this takes time unless you're just a freak like Spieth and Tiger. Like, I think he's sort of figured out Augusta. I mean, he's met with the legend Jeff Knox. I mean, I don't know how you can not figure it out after that, but I think he's sort of figured out like what he has to do there. I think he knows what he has to do, but like one of our friends that probably does not want to be named, he just has these mental lapses over nine holes where he just like drifts out of it for some reason. He's not focused, and then all of a sudden he shoots a 41, and you know, there goes the tournament.
Who's our friend that we don't want to be named? But like, I'm missing this one.
Well, I just don't know if he wants to be named, like, kind of rolling on Rory's mental game.
Oh, okay. We'll have to connect on that one off. I thought you were comparing Rory's game to somebody that we know, and I was like, who do we know that's that good at golf? But okay. All right, Jason Day has emerged as the favorite. Do you agree with that? I agree with the betting odds. I'm looking at Sportsbook right now. He's 6.5 to 1, and he's ahead of Spieth and Rory that are 8 to 1. Do you agree with that?
No, I think that Bubba has to be the favorite at Augusta.
See, Shane said the same thing, and the stat that I tried to cite was that outside of his two wins there, his track record at Augusta is not that good. So I don't know what that means. I mean, he's obviously proven that he can win there. I still feel like Spieth should have beat him in 2014. I don't know. I'm digging my own grave again on two different podcasts saying that I don't like Bubba. But
I don't know. Like, just you're right about the top tens. I mean, even outside of Bubba's two Masters wins, like all top tens in all other majors, like I think he's got like one, and I think it was at Oakmont at the U.S. Open.
Wow,
I'm pretty. You can look that up. I'm not positive about that. But
did you say the PGA that he was in the playoff?
Yeah, I guess that's
Whistling Straits. Yeah.
But yeah, he's not been great outside of his two wins at Augusta. I just feel like the way he's played coming in, the way he hits it there, and he's another guy, first 27 holes, right? Like, you'll know if he's in or out.
Yeah.
Because if he's out, he's out. But if he's on, then he's gonna be tough to deal with over the weekend.
Yeah, you're right. Those are the four top tens he has. 07 U.S. Open, 2010 PGA, and his Masters wins in 2012 and 14. But yeah. He followed up the win in 2012 with a T50. Last year he was a T38. I mean,
which one would you bet first? Bubba wins a British Open, or Mike Weir wins this year's Masters?
God, this is embarrassing because I picked Bubba to win the British last year.
There's no way. He's never gonna win a British Open, is he?
Well, it's kind of like, I've kind of taken this on more of a hedge your happiness thing rather than actually be right. At least if Bubba wins, I can be like, oh, I told you guys, but it'll offset how angry it would make me. But the worst is that I picked Bubba to win the British, and then Zach Johnson went and won it. I did not properly cover my hedges.
Zach Johnson, Augusta, and St. Andrews. Have you seen the list of people who've won there?
Stop. This is not an appropriate conversation for this podcast.
It is unbelievable, the list of people who have won there. And Zach Johnson's on it.
I refuse to address that. But anyways, back to Jason Day. I'd heard some rumblings from some people thinking that of all the guys in the top three or the top whatever that we made this out to be, he was the most likely guy to drop off. That is clearly not going to be the case. I feel like I just said this about Rory again, but I still don't feel like what he's done in the last 12 months or so, 13 months, if you go back to the Farmers, I don't think it's gotten enough attention. Like, is this seven wins now? I mean, that's kind of I don't want to use that word, but it kind of like that one guy who used to run off seven wins like it was nothing in that time period. Like, that's not a normal thing that happens. Maybe Phil and maybe VJ have done that in the last 15 or so years, but am I right?
Well, I mean, this goes back to our conversation about historically great players. Like, we might be underplaying how historically great Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, and Rory McIlroy are, right? I know we're doing it about Rory because he's about to become probably the greatest European golfer of all time, and people sort of just like shrug it off, like, you know, like he's good. Yeah. And this is just coming in the wake of that one guy who's working on his simulator game right now. I mean, that's the issue here is that we've seen it all before from him, and so it doesn't seem as impressive when it's sort of divvied up amongst three guys. But no, I mean, Jason Day, six wins in his last 13 events, seven in the last, 14 months? I mean, he's been unreal. And I heard you guys talk about, you know, who's best is best. And I agree with, I think it was you that said, like, who cares? Yeah. Like, well, it's just awesome. Like, they're all awesome. Like the hope should be that they all three play at the top of their game in the same week, or somewhat close to it, so we just get epic tournament after epic tournament. I think that's where people get lost a little bit.
Yeah, and it's just unrealistic to think that's going to happen. I mean, look at how amazing, like, Phil is, and I've not looked this up, let's say he's one of the top 12 golfers of all time. I don't know if that's a ridiculous statement or not.
I think I had him at 11 a couple years ago.
Okay, so, and look back at, how many times did we see Phil and Tiger at their best in a major? Ever. Did we ever? I mean, maybe Tiger at his best and Phil at his best was when Phil would finish six shots back in second place. I don't know. But, I mean, we just don't see guys go full out A game like Jason Day did at the PGA last year in majors really ever. I mean, yeah, Spieth did it in the Masters last year, and I don't think his A game, that was his A game at the U.S. Open, but I mean, I think we really only saw two A games last year. It was Spieth at the Masters and Day at the PGA. We can't count on ever figuring out whether or not we're going to, that on Sunday, both guys are going to have their A games. They're going to shoot 64, 65, and we're going to have a winner. Like, I don't know. It just seems like a kind of a silly thing. It's a fun thing to talk about. It's whatever, but it just seems kind of silly. It's like, it's almost like we look at the way guys win rather than, once we moved on from how often they win, it's like, okay, we have to find a new way to talk about this, right? And we got to, like, never mind. Okay, we see that, you know, Spieth won this year and Day's won twice. But if this hypothetical were to happen, what would be better? I don't know. It just seems like a waste of time to me. But
do you think the big three is silly in the same way?
Absolutely. I mean, it's like when those guys line it up, you know, to start a tournament, you look at the, like, just the odds difference between, like, the big three and Adam Scott when he lines up. The difference is, the odds difference are the same as, like, between Adam and Bubba. Like, Adam's 12-1 right now. Bubba's 10-1. Rory and Spieth are 8-1. That, there's no real differentiation there, right? I mean, we're not talking, those three guys have not separated themselves out enough to really just point at it and say, I don't know. This is the opposite point I probably made 2 months ago where I said the top three in the rankings have clearly set themselves apart, but my point is that when you tee it up, there's not a clear cut advantage for any player. Once you get in that top 12 or whatever, I mean, yeah, are Day's chances of winning slightly stronger than, you know, Dustin Johnson's chance of winning? Sure, I'd be willing to say that, but the difference is negligible when you're talking about like a percentage chance of winning a tournament when you start it. So that's why I don't know. At the end of their careers, if you want to look at it, and three people have truly separated themselves from the historical parts of the game, sure. But Jason Day has won one major at this point. But between the three of them, they've won seven. Granted, they're all in their 20s, but like you can't take anything for granted. Look at Exhibit A is that one guy that we're not going to name again. Like, you don't know. You don't know. The big three could change to a big four or big five or big two by the end of this year. So that's why you just can't put a label on it at this point. But I don't know.
I think part of the fun there is just kind of trying to extract the future, right? Like, you're trying to extract who at the end, because you're right. Like, only time and only history will tell who a true big three was for a certain period or whatever the number is. But I think the fun in it and the fun in all of these little mini debates is like, is like you're trying to sort of look into the future and extract out. I agree also. I also wrote a column at the end of last fall that declared them the big three. So I'm I'm sort of trying to like back up my point here. But I think I just think a little bit of it is trying to move ahead into the future and say, you know, like you're just trying to predict like who out of this class, out of this group, out of this era is going to stand out 20, 30, 50 years from now.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Now, if we're talking about guys that are most likely to do that, that's sure, that's probably this group. But who's to say Ricky Fowler doesn't win four or five majors in his career, right? And then we look back at this, I don't know, in a totally different way. Let's say Jason Day is injured and, you know, his injuries hamper his entire career and he's stuck on one major. Like, I don't know. There's just so much that can still happen. So many of these guys are so young. Bryson DeChambeau is supposed to come in and change the entire game for all, from what I've heard.
Do we like Bryson DeChambeau?
Do we like Bryson DeChambeau? That's a tricky question. His golf game, I'm pretty much sold on at this point. Initially, I'd say I doubted it. I doubted that it could work at the PGA Tour level. I definitely didn't say his game won't ever work, you know, with his odd specs of his clubs and unorthodox swing. But I just said I wanted to see it, and I wasn't going to initially react either way. I wasn't going to say, you know, if he came out hot, I wasn't going to say, oh, he's the future, and if he came out slow, I was going to write him off. So I'm still kind of in that phase of, you know, determining that, but from what I've seen so far, I'm really, really impressed, mostly at what other people are saying about him, because I think it was one of the Molinaris that played with him and tweeted something and said, one of the most talented players I've ever seen player, like, hashtag game changer. And I don't hear other pros talk about other golfers like that, especially an amateur. He's still an amateur, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So from that perspective, do I like his golf game? Yes. However, his kind of weirdness and quirkiness seems almost too intentional at this point. Like, you're trying a little too hard at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I was talking with a buddy today, and he's like, I don't know if this is going to, like, play well among, like, tour pros, like, ever, you know, just traveling around all the time. Like, is this going to go over well, or are they going to be like, I mean, I don't know, like, I feel like people have been curious so far, like, Rory was hitting his clubs in Dubai or wherever they were, and, like, I don't know, it'll be interesting. By the way, you just mentioned one of the Molinari brothers, like, If you're trying to, like, you know, hashtag build your brand, is it a great move to have, like, Dodo as your Twitter handle? Like, it's like Dodo M58 or something like that.
I gotta be honest, I don't even know what you're referencing here.
Eduardo Molinari is his Twitter handle.
Yeah? Oh, that's his actual handle. I thought you were talking about his profile picture.
No, his Twitter handle is Dodo.
It's bad when, even at this point, maybe this is more of a reflection on me than it is them. I still don't know the difference between the two of them. Like, I know one of them is better than the other one. You could totally convince me either way right now, and I would totally believe you. Like, oh yeah, I think I knew that. I think I knew that. People don't understand that I really don't watch much golf anymore. I really, really don't. People are getting mad that I don't have anything on the website. It's like,
so you're like a real sports writer now.
Yeah, that's something like, sure. I can promise you I'm anything but that. But I at best I'll see the end of a tournament on a Sunday at this point. But it's pretty bad. So people are asking me to write previews and stuff. It's like, I don't know. I don't have anything to say. All I'm going off is reading your guys' dumb tweets out there and reacting to it. That's all I do.
That seems like a great way to prepare your Masters coverage, actually.
I called you because you're the most prepared guy I know. I told you, you're carrying me in this podcast. This is like, this is the flu game for me. This is literally the flu game. I've got the flu or food poisoning or something, and you're carrying me right now.
Will you Photoshop my face onto Scottie Pippen?
I can do that. I've got a lot. I have gotten better at Photoshop lately. So
I'm going to put on those Air shoes that were his shoes. Do you remember those?
I think so. Yeah.
The ones that spelled Air on the side. Yep.
Air Porter.
Yeah, they were awesome. That's you. Everybody wanted those shoes. Like when I was in middle school.
That's you. All right, I'm going to go to some questions because I threw it out there, and we got some really good questions. I thought so.
I'm excited.
Okay. Whose career would you rather have? This is from @clubhouse_lead. Whose career would you rather have? Jeff Knox or 3-time major champion Padraig Harrington?
Well, Gary Van Sickle of golf.com just dropped a profile of Knox, and the ending to it was basically Jeff Knox was like is unavailable for interviews because he runs everything like through Augusta National because he's a member there and everything, but he did a little research on him, and apparently he's won a bunch of Georgia mid amateurs, almost won the Georgia amateur. And Keegan, I think it was Keegan Bradley said like he's unbelievably good at Augusta National. Kevin Kisner said if he played if every tournament was played at Augusta National, which by the way would be awesome, Jeff Knox would be on tour. So Padraig Harrington probably has more money, although I'm not positive about that. I guess.
I'm definitely not positive. Actually, I'm pretty positive that's not correct.
I think I might go Jeff Knox.
Yeah, I think his life is probably pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, like you just play Augusta. Like,
yeah, one of those two guys can show up at Augusta and play any day of the week, and it's not Padraig Harrington.
I'm in. I'm going Jeff Knox. That's a great question.
Isn't it? Steve Shermer @SportsSherm also asked, who'd shoot lower right now, Tiger from the member tees or Jeff Knox from the tips?
Oh, that's not even a question. I mean, is Tiger only playing like 14 holes or what?
The member tees at Augusta are kind of a joke, if I understand right. They're like 6,400 yards or something like that, but... I'm not positive Tiger can get around a 6,400-yard course at this point.
No, I'm taking Knox there.
The Tour Junkies, @Tour_Junkies, want to know, would you commit a crime if someone promised you a golf weekend at Augusta? And if so, how heinous of a crime?
I feel contractually obligated to pass on this question. I'm actually terrified to say anything right now.
I didn't mean to walk you into that trap, but I think I'd go to, like, grand larceny. Probably somewhere in that, maybe even arson.
Well, Spieth committed some arson last year at Augusta. So
that's true. He's gotten away with it. So yeah, maybe I would do the same. Sarah Endicott wants to know if she should be betting all of her savings on Jason Day or only half of her savings.
So the thing that worries me here is so he's taken his RV down there to set up shop at Augusta. I think today, actually Thursday before. I feel like, he's a guy who traditionally has gotten in his own head a little bit, and I feel like I just feel like he's so, like, into winning it and the whole deal. I almost feel like the Rory route of just, like, hanging in Florida until you go there and just not caring, but just being a little bit more just laid back about it, I feel like that's helpful. Yeah. And so, I don't know. It's easy to pick Day, but I'm kind of out on him winning it this year.
Okay. Tucker Blankenship wants to know, if you could decide what the format and holes for playoff at Augusta is, would you go with what do you go with? And is it a 3-hole aggregate on Amen Corner?
Wow, that would be, I saw you talk about this the other day. I think I forgot what you said, but you got to go. I mean, do you go 12, 13, skip 14, and then go 15, 16 at aggregate?
That's exactly what I proposed to Shaq and House to talk about on their pod. I haven't listened yet. I'm assuming they didn't talk about it. But I think it might be an issue with daylight at that point, but you can't tell me that isn't like the best possible playoff in all of golf. You get to see all those holes again, aggregate score. You get to skip 14, which is probably the least compelling hole in that stretch. You got this. You start with a nervy tee shot over water. You end with a nervy tee shot over water. Two awesome par fives in between. Tell me that's better than playing Holly, a dogleg right uphill par four every that's basically until you finally go over to number 10. That's not even a comparison, in my opinion.
Well, I like that it's two par fives and two par threes, and the secret or kind of the sneaky fun thing there is that I don't like ending tournaments on a par three, but there, if somebody's down, you know, one or two. Like, there's a real chance to throw it up on the hill and let it roll down for an ace on 16. Right? I mean, can you imagine what that would be like?
Yeah.
I'm in on that.
Okay, good. Well, if you see Billy around the grounds next week, will you tell him that I said that?
Yeah. No, I'll tell him that Ad Nolan wants to change the format of his historic tournament, which is in its 80th year, by the way.
Please don't. Please do not refer him to my Twitter feed, please. if you could make any changes to Augusta National, to any particular holes of the course as a whole, what kind of changes would you like to see made?
I'll let you go first because I feel like you've thought about this more than
I have thought about it.
Also because I'm scared to answer.
I don't really know what I would change about 11, but I would probably just start with blowing up 11 and then kind of rearranging it based on where the impact zones were on the bombs.
You know what? So one of the pieces I'm doing before the Masters is players' favorite holes. And I talked to Justin Rose the other day, mm-hmm. and he said 11 was his favorite hole.
That's because he's Justin Rose. Like, he's annoying, and he's... Like, that's such a Justin Rose answer. Like, my answer's gonna be different than everyone else. Like, oh, I like 11, blah, blah, blah. It's probably just, like, the shadiest spot on the course and doesn't have to wear those enormously comical-sized sunglasses. I put zero stock in that answer.
Continue on, though.
I've never played the course before. The guy almost won the Masters. I supposedly am a better source of information on what to do with number 11. But I mean, it's not a fun hole, in my opinion, because you guys are hitting like four woods and hybrids and just bailing out so far right to stay out of the water, and it becomes an up-and-down contest. And I don't know. It's not fun anymore. I don't know. It was kind of a joke the way Tiger used to play it and what caused the changes, but the whole point of Augusta National when Bobby Jones and Alistair McKenzie designed it was that you would have options off the tee, and it was supposed to be for the creative player, and it was about creating angles, and the modern game has kind of ruined that, and that you can just kind of bomb it and figure it out from there. So I agree that there had to be changes made, but a lot of the changes that have been made just take any like chance of strategy out of it. Like on 11, you just reach for the driver. There's no strategy with that tee shot at all. It's not the way the course is intended to be played. I agree it makes it harder, but now the course is a lot more about being able to execute off the tee, like having that be a very key part of the game, than that wasn't, you know, what those guys intended. But those guys are long gone, and the game has changed a lot since then. But, 11's the one I want to change the most. I think I got a lot of heat for saying I wanted to change number 3. I just don't think it's that great of a hole. Some people... It's kind of the opposite of what I said, though. There are a lot of options off that tee. I don't find like a 60-yard weird pitch to a tabletop green to be a real good test of golf. Not a lot of people agree with me on that one. I think 7 could be changed a lot. They've lengthened that so much, but not giving the fairway any extra width. And guys are hitting their approaches off the downslope to a green that's really funky shaped and surrounded by bunkers. I don't like the way that hole plays now. But you want me to keep going or something? What else?
Mine is not necessarily the one that I don't necessarily love, and I saw people arguing about this on Twitter the other day. I don't know whose side I'm on here, but I don't love 14. I mean, okay, so this is all relative, right? Like, obviously, all the holes are amazing, but compared to the rest of the back nine, 14 just doesn't. I don't mind 11. I think 11's fine, but 14 is just like, I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me. And then the change I would make is to figure out, and this would, I don't know, this could be argued, I don't know if people will like this, but I would try to, and I think we talked about this last year maybe, figure out how to end the tournament on 15.
Yeah.
And have that be the final hole. I just think that, I mean, the drama there would be, I don't know, 18 is, it's just a tough birdie hole, and so there's not the drama of being able to birdie it and win. There's the drama of maybe making bogey or double to lose, but I don't know. I would like it better, I think, if 15 was the end.
Yeah, I mean, if 15 was the end, that would be amazing, but it just the way that geographically works out with the course, it can't end that way. But
right,
I will
right.
say, at least on 18 on Sunday, they do put the pin in a very favorable spot, so it gives guys a chance for birdie, and they do set it up for drama. And we've seen a decent amount of Sunday birdies on that hole that have been very meaningful, thinking back to Tiger in 2002, I believe, to win by two. I think it was to win by two. But yeah, Marco Mira birdied it to win. Schwartzel birdied it to win. Adam Scott obviously birdied to what ended up Cabrera. Going to a playoff. Cabrera did right on top of him. So it's provided a little bit of drama just in being the last hole, though. I don't think it's a very uphill holes in general are typically not great golf holes, and I don't think 18's any exception. But I don't know what you change about 18. Just the way that the course sets up from a layout standpoint, that's how you have to get back to the clubhouse. So I don't think anything's changing there. So the tremendous Jake Nichols at Jow Nichols says, past champions, competing and non competing, you would take to beat Tiger next week.
Everybody but Ian Woosnam.
Wow. Taking weird over Tiger.
I mean, can Tiger hit driver? Like, do we definitively know that?
That's fair. That's a fair point. but you have so little faith in Ian Woosnam that you're willing to say Tiger without able to hit a driver.
I watched a clip today. Do you remember a couple years ago when it was a clip of Rory? He was going down like a list of people in the tournament that he thought could win. I don't know why he was doing this at a press conference, but he was talking about, he goes, you know, Stuart Sink, you know, just going down this list. And then he gets to Ian Woosnam and he goes, no. And everybody was like, what? And he goes, oh, I didn't mean to say that out loud.
I love that is like something like you could get in trouble for saying. No, like literally every person on the planet could tell you that Ian Woosnam's not going to win the Masters. But if Rory says it, oh my God, he's counting on a fellow competitor.
Yeah, Marco Mira finished ahead of Bubba Watson last year. How about that?
Oh, wow. Did he really?
Marco Mira was T22 last year. Bubba was T36.
My God. I did not know that. I think Sandy Lyle's a sleeper for this year, simply only because after he missed the cut last year, they showed him warming up on the range on Saturday.
Which is exactly what we would be doing.
Exactly. That's what I tweeted. I said, he'd be doing exactly what I would be doing. I'd stay there until they kicked me out.
By the way, did you know Trevor Immelman is ranked like 1650th in the world right now?
I don't even think the rankings go that high, do they?
Maybe it's just like the default for like once you get past the end. But he won the Masters 8 years ago. It's not like he won it in like 1984.
Man. He's like, is he still exempt into other majors with that master wins? I don't think he is he?
No, I think it's only 5 years.
Oh, let's see. Oh my, he is 1,666. I thought that like they stopped at 1,500 something.
Well, I guess not.
Wow, they made a special exemption for him. That's bad. another really good question. Tim Regones? I don't know how to say that, sorry. You can go back in time and see one Masters shot live in person. Which do you choose?
I know what you're choosing.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be the same one.
Well, are we? Yeah, I mean.
I mean, you know I want to see the Bubba hooked wedge, right?
That's amazing. I think obviously, can we just exclude like Tiger on 16?
Okay, yeah, that's the easy one, right? Yeah, so I'm with you.
Which, yeah, no, okay, let's exclude that. Okay. There's like 11 shots from Nicholas in 86 that would have been awesome.
That's the thing, is I'm trying to think of one right now from that round, and I can't really.
I think for me, and this is a little bit of nostalgia, because I always, the times that I've gone, I've always sat on 16 with my parents, with friends, with my wife, whatever. We always sit on 16, so we've got a lot of good memories there. And just that tee shot he hit there when he said, which, by the way, was this the genesis of Tour Sauce?
Yeah, this is the Omega. This is the beginning.
Be good. Oh, it is. Oh, and he didn't even look. He just picked up his tee. It's the best thing ever.
Have you ever heard Jack Nicklaus tell that story? I think I've only heard it 16 times so far in 2016.
It's so good though, and he yeah, I mean, that I think for me that would probably be it. Although Larry Mize chipping in 87 would have been pretty awesome too.
To beat Norman? Come on, that would have been heartbreaking.
Oh, it would have been great though. I mean, it's from Augusta. Like, come on, that would have been awesome.
Oh, God. I just saw a tweet from Golf Digest that says, Bubba Watson goes shirtless for some reason to promote his new sock deal. And there's a picture. Yeah. Okay.
I got that. I got an email about that earlier and just deleted it.
Okay. Thank you. I don't know. I'm trying to think of another Tiger shot, though, that would be up there. There's not one that's on that level. There's definitely not. But in his 90, there's just not a moment in 97 that really stands out. It's like, I needed to see that live. But it's probably going to be Nicklaus's putt on 17 and 86 on Sunday.
Yeah.
That just set the place off. My grandpa was there, and he still tells me about that. So
I had a we were on a conference call with Jim Nance and Nick Faldo today, and Nance called it one of the great days of his life.
Doesn't he have like three kids or something like that?
He said it was one of the great days of his life. He also pretended like, so when he got on the conference call, somebody asked him a question, and he said, okay, could you hold on a second? Yeah, could you bring that toast back after you burn it a little more? Could you bring it back to me here in a minute? Like, he pretended like he had room service in there burning his toast.
What? Okay. I've completely missed the burnt toast story or whatever. I've seen this going around Twitter today. Can you catch me up on that?
Well, I didn't read the entire thing. I've basically only seen it on Twitter, too, and apparently he likes his toast burnt, and he like carries a laminated photo of it in his wallet so he can show people at restaurants like how he likes it.
What?
I think that's the real story. It's kind of embarrassing that neither one of us like have actually read the real story.
I feel like I'm embarrassed to do that. Like when I go get my hair cut somewhere new, like taking in a picture. Like,
do you take in a picture of like Tom Brady? You know, I do it like this.
Well, I've taken a picture from when I had more hair. Like, I've started to lose a little bit more hair. So they're always really confused. Like I can't make you, like, grow hair back in this receding hairline part. Like,
so Justin Thomas is in 20 years going to have to take a picture of himself when he was, like, 20.
Yeah, I don't know if... I think he's going to be having to take that into, like, a hair clinic or whatever LeBron did to grow his hair back. I think that's where... That's where Thomas is going to dig his picture in.
He needs to be friends with Rooney, exchange some direct messages.
There you go. 50 minutes in, I think we're safe that JT is not listening this far, in case that he was listening. So, I'm not going to get you in trouble by making you answer this question, but I want to read it out loud because it's hilarious. All right.
Okay. What else? These questions are awesome. Let's get through a couple more.
It's hard to like read these and talk at the same time. There's so many good ones. All right. Car for the course. Who's the seat filler in Butler Cabin if DeChambeau wins it? Follow-up, predict Nance's call if he does. So who's the top I don't know. How would that work if an amateur won it?
I don't know any other amateurs. Would they bring in, like, the second amateur?
I don't know another amateur that I could possibly name at this
there's
point.
There's an amateur in the field. He won the U.S. Mid-Am last year. I tweeted this out earlier today. He won it on a walk-off ace on a par 4.
I do remember seeing that.
Get out of here. How cool is that? How'd you get into the Masters? Oh, I aced a par 4 at the U.S. Mid-Am. Oh, cool. I finished top 50 in the world golf ranking.
If that was me, you wouldn't have to ask that question. That's just how I would start conversations. I wouldn't even say my name first.
For DeChambeau winning, Nance's call has to be... it's got to reference Bobby Jones, right?
Oh, yeah. Something I was going to go with.
One for the Jones family, something like that.
By the way, I wanted to mention this when I was looking at the picture today of Phil winning in 2004 and him jumping and running and hugging his family, and remembering back to 99 when he had his first kid right around the U.S. Open. Do you think it's a coincidence that both of his two subsequent kids were had well clear of major season?
No, I do not think that's a coincidence.
I don't think there's any chance that's a coincidence.
Like, Kevin Streelman and Danny Willett had, their kids were born recently. They were thinking about not playing the Masters. Like, that will never, definitely won't now, but that was no chance with Phil after
none.
The first
one. Absolutely none. Aaron Oberhauser asked a very important question. Should you go pimento cheese or egg salad? Is it situational?
Well, you got to go egg salad early, because you don't want the egg salad to sit around all day.
Okay.
So I go egg salad early and then pimento in the afternoon.
Okay. See, I'm not an egg salad guy at all, so this is a very easy question for me. But I get in trouble for this every year when I say pimento cheese sandwich is way overhyped. Oh, I'm hiding behind my desk.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like I don't know what it's like. I mean, it's rated so highly that it's difficult. It can't be underrated, right? It's either rated properly or it's overrated.
Well, it like maybe was underrated at one point, then became so rated that it's overrated.
Yeah,
I don't think I've worded that properly, but I mean, somebody tried to tell me it's like store bought pimento. It's not special cheese. It's just like a tub of pimento cheese that they spread on a piece of bread.
Well, I think Wright Thompson did a story on this a couple of years ago, and I think it is from like some somebody. Again, I'm actually worried to comment on this, but just go look up the Wright Thompson story. He did a whole story on the pimento cheese.
Okay, it's good. Well, thank you for just completely undermining me on my own podcast.
Like you told me to carry you, and so that's what I'm trying to
this
do.
This is true. This is true. But all right, any other surprises or any other things we haven't talked about when it comes to the Masters this week? I think anybody we barely even talked Spieth, really.
Well, you're gonna feel silly when Patty Reed's getting fitted for like a 48 long jacket on Sunday afternoon, and you've gone the whole year without mentioning. I know you're gun shy after last year, but it could happen.
Well, I can always fall back on my tweet from today, which was his scripting, and I don't know if you saw this.
I didn't see it yet.
He released his scripting today from Callaway, and I. May or may not have put a green jacket over his Sunday red. The best is I'm getting responses that people think that that's actually what happened. That he released his scripting with the green jacket on Sunday.
Oh, that's amazing. It's so hard to see somebody outside of the top 10 or 11 favorites winning it. DeChambeau would be a crazy cool story, but it's just, I mean, first timers, I mean, we know the history there. We tried to pick Koepka last year, and it's just hard to do it. I mean, even somebody like Justin Thomas, it's difficult to do.
What's your main focus going to be during the week? I'm guessing you're not going to be the normal tweet storm. You know, if you're actually there, you gotta make use of the access you get there, right?
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. I've got some. I'm trying to file all my kind of preview stuff at the end of this week, and then when I'm there, I think I'm just gonna, just walk around as much as I can, talk to as many people as I can, try to do stuff like what I did with Tiger at the PGA last year when I caught him on a practice round and wrote about that. I just feel like being at a place informs. You don't get to write as much. You don't get to tweet as much, especially at Augusta, because you can't have your phone. But being there, the atmosphere, just the everything that goes on, it really informs the things you write a lot better. So I'm fired up about it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, enjoy it. I'm quite envious of your experience. And anything that you've written that you're like don't really like, if you want to give me like your bottom barrel stuff, can you just like email it over to me and I can post it, because I probably won't have any time to write anything. And I know you. You've written more. your stuff that you probably aren't even posting is more than I am capable of writing before the start of the Masters. So just email it my way. You're my ghostwriter from here on out.
Yeah, I'll just have my editor, like, all the stuff he cuts out, he just email to you, and you can just paste it all together.
Just random sentences. I don't even care if they make sense. That's fine. I've got to be on a flight back to the U.S. in, like, 12 hours, and I'm going to have no time before the Masters, unfortunately. So... But, well, my friend, Masters Week is almost here. I appreciate you helping me break it down. I think we've covered most of everything, but we probably didn't even mention the winner, because that's usually how these things go.
Yep. Martin Keimer, 2016. Now, I appreciate everybody's tweets and questions. That's awesome.
The questions were fantastic. If I get questions this good, I will start doing mailbags again. They were fantastic. But
yeah, they were really, really good. Really good. I appreciate you having me on, Chris.
Of course, man. Follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS, and we will catch up again soon, buddy. Thank you.
Okay. See ya.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes.
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most! Expect